Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, January 31st in the brilliant year 2014. We're 31 days into a new year. And hopefully we are another episode into the context of retooling for our coming of age. This is Jeff Dunphy coming to you live from Calgary. Jameen is still on assignment and shall be back with us relatively soon, we trust. There's lots has transpired this week. We are going to do a global review, if you will, and if you might, and then we're going to chat a little about fear. Certainly, it is something that has been used to enslave mankind throughout the millennia. And it is something that is certainly omnipresent in what is happening in the globe. And it's one of the things that some of my students oftentimes ask is, talking about all this stuff just makes me upset. And one of the things that we oftentimes respond to is, there is a silver lining to this, or in fact a gold lining. And we would like to reiterate that in the ending of an era, the ending of a cycle, comes the beginning of a new cycle. And it lends itself sometimes to great upset at foregoing the old, but it also, on the other end of it, it gives us great appreciation for there is something that is coming that is better. Okay, so let's chat a little about the globe. And then we're going to chat further about fear and getting out of the system. And then we're going to have a little chat on speech as well. So we have a system that is now, they're running for cover. In fact, the U.S. has suggested that they are going to taper a bit. And I think as one of the intelligent ones who's doing an expose on this, the feds are tapering because they're terrified that the U.S. dollar is going to start to collapse. So, I mean, what they're doing is they are choosing the worst of two evils, which is, and we've also got an emerging market meltdown here. So we've got a whole bunch of things happening that are giving us great pause, okay? So, Another thing that comes to light is, I think, one of the things that we would like to see happen in the course of our turning on the lights, we would like to think that those who know, those insiders who know, and some insiders have actually stepped forward and are starting to talk, some insiders who have wanted to step forward in the words of some other guys who are turn on the lights, they were suicided. We call that the coin. Yeah, the guy shot himself twice in the head. He committed suicide. So the context of all of this is that we see people that we think are being inside witness to what is about to go down, and they're taking it so hard because they don't want to be party to it. So we have a sad rash of dead bankers in the last week. Okay, so for the third time in the last week, a senior financial executive has died in what appears to be a suicide. Okay, so there's a JP Morgan senior manager on Tuesday, there was a Deutsche Bank executive on Sunday, and the Russell Investments chief economist and former Fed economist Mike Duker was found dead on the side of a highway in Washington State. So police said the death appeared to be a suicide. When it does appear to be a suicide, the police don't further investigate. They merely clean it up and send the guy to the morgue. And unfortunately, I suspect many tie their existence to how wealthy they can become, but I think that some of these suicides may be that they cannot live with the thought that the system and the marketplace in which they have been rendered attached to iron handcuffs, is such that they just can't deal with it anymore. They would, you know, many of these may actually have suggested that they're going to do an expose or talk about it, and then actually the it doesn't take much of a leap to suggest, sorry about that, but it doesn't take much of a leap to suggest that somebody knocks them off for fear that they may be turning the lights on or shedding light on what's going on. Okay, so we have Greece now making news again. Between sort of 2010, May of 2010 and the spring of 2011, everybody was chatting about Greece, okay? So then the realization finally dawned that if Greece actually left the Eurozone, the actual euro, the currency of the euro, would take a huge dump, okay? And so I think there were a whole bunch of the banks said, we can't afford to lose. And so it became clear that there's no fear that Greece, which is now a decrepit shell of a country with an economy and a society in absolute shambles, has now become a slave state to the European central bankers. It's not going to be kicked out of Europe, and only an internal coup would allow it to finally break free from the European central banks. So now we have Japan. We have Japan having to taper because their yen is starting to take a ditch. We now have Nigeria starting to play with China and the Chinese yuan or renminbi to start to transact in that regard. We have real disposable income has plummeted, okay, the most it has in 40 years. So the biggest collapse since the semi-depression in 1974. So I think what is happening, in fact, is there people are going into their savings in order to spend, and so savings is collapsing again. We're seeing the equity funds are huge weekly outflows in over 2 years. We've got the Walmarts coming up and giving us guidance saying, yeah, we aren't doing very well merely because everybody's broke and we had bad weather. We've got unemployment growing. We have some dramatic continuation of the crappy news. And, you know, we've got the Nikkei falling. We've got the Indian central bank governor is talking about international monetary cooperation. So what they're doing is the Indians are starting to look around and thinking they aren't doing this in cahoots with each other. They aren't doing it collaboratively, managing the world collaboratively. They're now starting to play games with each other. They're now starting to not trust each other. And the forcefulness, browbeating everybody into towing the line of monetary policy globally, is now potentially being compromised. When the U.S. Fed starts to say they're going to taper, to what they're doing is they're saying, oh my God, the dollar is going to collapse. So what we'll do is taper to see if we can support the dollar. But in the tapering, it's the same sort of thing. The economy is collapsing. You throw all that money into the system when there's no velocity of money. And there's some things that get us greatly compromised. Okay. So now we've got Ben Bernanke leaving this week, or not that Yellen is any better, but everybody's starting to see that the monetary policy and the nonsense that is happening is coming to a halt. So now I want to chat a little about how fearful is this and how does it make you feel and how it affects you and how people use it to manipulate and to control and to manage the planet. So here's an interesting thing about fear and about military force, okay? So since September 11th, 2001, which is when the great debacle of the bombing of the Twin Towers in New York, U.S. Special Operations Forces have grown in every conceivable way, from their numbers to their budget. Most telling, however, has been the exponential rise in special ops deployment globally. This presence, get a load of this, in nearly 70% of the world, 70% of the world's nations, provides new evidence of the size and scope of a secret war being waged from Latin America to the backlands of Afghanistan. from training missions with African allies to information operations launched in cyberspace. So here we have a whole bunch of Bush haters, and Bush, everybody tells everybody how bad Bush was, and I'm not suggesting that he was either bad or good, and all the Obama lovers start to talk about how good Obama is. However, in the waning days of the Bush presidency, special ops were reportedly deployed in about 60 countries around the world. By 2010, now we're into Obama land, that number had swelled to 75. In 2011, Tim Nye said it would reach 120. And today, in 2013, elite U.S. forces were deployed in 134 countries around the globe. You think about that. 123% increase during the Obama years demonstrates how, in addition to conventional war and a CIA drone campaign, public diplomacy and extensive spying electronically, the U.S. is engaged in still another significant and growing form of overseas power projection, conducted largely in the shadows, where they don't have to tell anybody about it. The vast majority of these missions take place far from prying eyes, media scrutiny, or any type of oversight. So consequently, this is when you get blowback, okay? Oh, the other thing, established in 1987, Special Operations has grown steadily since 9/11. It's reportedly on track to reach 72,000 people in it. It started with 33,000 in 01. It's now got 72,000 people in it. So here we are again creating a militarized globe, never mind just the U.S., a militarized state. This gives us great pause, but it also speaks to what we've been suggesting has been happening ever since, and that is we have a U.S. printing money like a bunch of drunken sailors and projecting their military power all over the world in order to facilitate agendas that are absolutely nowhere near mutually beneficial. And this is frightening, and it should be attended to. We need to be, as we say in university, we need to be mindful that we need to seek out and speak the truth. Okay, last week we talked about gold being manipulated, and this week we're not going to address the gold manipulation as diligently, because I want to chat a little about fear. The last week's program had a lot on gold manipulation and how it's been done. I think everybody's coming out of the closet now saying there's no way it could not be manipulated, and it's no way that the markets themselves are fair. Okay, so now we are going to chat a little about all the fear talk and all the direction and the misdirection that is happening relative to mainstream media and relative to much of the mass mind, if you will. So what does fear do? In the inimitable words of a very wise man, fear serves no one save those who peddle in it. And consequently, right from grade school into graduate school, you have a lot of fear being propagated in order to facilitate the vendor's agenda. So what does fear do? We have three aspects of our brain. One aspect of our brain is the reptilian brain. And this aspect, the reptilian brain, is also housed in and around the amygdala. And when you are frightened, when you are full of fear, we equate that to the fight or flight routine. And we have been evolutionarily, if there is such a word, we have been in an era now where the fight or flight reflex has been generally unnecessary. Generally speaking, many people around the world are not necessarily fretting for their lives because somebody is attacking them. Now, I'm not suggesting that it isn't around. I'm suggesting that it is a psychological tool that those psychologically inclined, we coin them sometimes dark forces, use to manipulate people. Because people generally are very easy to manipulate if they're afraid and they're being told by somebody else that they will be taken care of. So now, generally speaking, men, mankind, humanity, if you will, they will respond with force. They will get ugly. They will defend themselves. They will strike out and react when three things happen. One, when they are actually threatened. So we see the movies and we see the mass mind saying, if you don't tell me what I want to hear, I'm going to strap you to the chair and beat you up. So that's the police interrogation. That's the military interrogation. I'm reminded of a James Bond movie where he's strapped to a chair and has a great big heavy rope slamming him in his nether regions, which is quite a tough scene to watch. So that's when you are threatened. And the other one is when you've got a really good tough guy who doesn't care if you beat him to death or is happy to die in his approach or embrace of his duty. You then have the bad guys or the evil guys saying, if you don't tell me what I want to know, I'm going to go hurt your wife or your children or your parents or your whatever. I'm going to hurt your family. So if your family or loved ones are threatened, then then tell us what we want to know or go and do this or go and do that. And the other third thing that happens when you can use fear to manipulate a population, manipulate a society, manipulate a world, is if you threaten their way of life. Now, the facade of 9/11, the nonsense that happened with the bringing down of the Twin Towers in New York, has now given them, given the powers that be, the opportunity to say, your way of life is going to be threatened, so we need to spy on you, we need to throw people in jail, we need to incarcerate people, we need to, you as the people, now work for us, the government, which is not only a travesty, unfortunately, it seems, a reality. Now, when we are constantly in fear, we constantly have our amygdala stimulated, we are not present. We are not in that place where we can think soundly, mindfully, and calmly. When we cannot think, when we are fretful, when we are anxious, when our adrenal glands are pumping adrenaline into our body, we really do back ourselves into a corner of fight or flight. And then we are easily manipulatable. So the Nazis during the Second World War, before the Second World War, they made great headway in order to facilitate their evil plans by giving the country someone to hate. And so they made the Jew, they made non-Aryans, the evil guy. They prosecuted, executed the Jews, and they gave the German people someone to hate. Now, it isn't too far of a stretch that the bad guys that did 9/11, and that is completely debatable onto who, in fact, did that, the bad guys now are everywhere. They're insidious to the whole system, and that's why the government has to create a state of fear. And the whole meme that they've plugged into in that regard is, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. Complete and utter hijack of one's independence when you say, well, yes, I don't care if they have, because I have nothing to hide. And the interesting irony in all of that is they can create evidence out of nothing in order to facilitate their agenda. That's a bit frightening. Frightening beyond contempt for a government that is run amok, and the government that is in the throes, in the final stages of its collapse. It is performing monetary policy right now that is bringing about its demise. And who's kidding who? There's no other scenario in that regard. So now let's chat a little about how we step out of fear and how we recognize that there is, at some point in time, not exactly sure when, But there is at some point in time when there will be a reckoning. The markets will have to collapse. We certainly are seeing emerging markets collapse. The U.S. economy is grinding to a halt. People are no longer believing what they're being told wholeheartedly, although the sheeple quotation that we've used on many occasions is still quite omnipresent. I think I would like to play that hand. So I want to now tell you a little story about the perspective of before and after. And this was shared with us and spoken of by Jameen earlier this week in one of our classes. Imagine, if you will, that you have a camera inside a womb and you're watching a child grow. You're watching a baby grow from fertilization to a zygote to an embryo to a fetus to but all you see is the development of that child. So it grows, and your program, if you will, your program is one channel, and you see this child grow. And at 9 months or 40 weeks, you see this child start to move around. You see lots of noise and into a bright light, it appears, from your perspective, it appears to get sucked out into the world. And so from your perspective, certainly all you can see was the development of this child, and then it leaves. And so from that perspective, you could be wont to say, oh, boo-hoo, that was a bad thing that happened, when in fact it was the birth of a new being into the world. However, your perspective is such that that isn't what you see. And so consequently, we are seeing the birth of a new era, if you will, and we're also seeing an old era being sucked down the tubes because it no longer serves the greater good, one. It no longer serves or acts in alignment with the cosmic laws, it's another one, and it has run its cycle. There's nothing you can do about the fact that the earth spins around and the sun is going to set every day. To moan that, to bitch and complain about that is absolute lunacy. You don't go out in the fall and look at the leaves falling off the trees and think, oh my goodness gracious, the world is coming to an end. What's happening is that the end of a cycle has happened. Now, some interesting observations about how historians view centuries, okay? And you would suggest that centuries should be from 2000 to 3000 or from 1000 to 2000, or the centuries should be from the 1900s to the 2000s, from the 2000s to the 2100s. But in fact, historians generally consider the 19th century running from about 1815, which was Battle of Waterloo, to about 1914, which was the beginning of the First World War. And if that in fact is the case, it would certainly define the 20th century by the period 1914 to 2014, and ending with the year in which the old system dies whilst a new one emerges, okay? And if in this new year of 2014 we welcome that, or welcome ourselves into the 21st century, because there's an overlap. One system has to die, and not unlike the leaves fall off the tree, and then the spring happens, and then there's a bit of a calamity, and the spring happens, and the buds come out, and the leaves start to form again. This is the end of a cycle, right? And the beginning of a new cycle. I think, or rather, I would like to suggest, I know that all things in the world are subject to the law of cycles, or the law of periodicity. And in fact, this is something I do know. I would suggest that this last cycle is in the final days, weeks, months of its demise, and I think a new system will emerge. As we've spoken about before, we have an old system that is so broken that it can't be retrofitted in order to facilitate the new system. We have an old group of rulers that are using methodologies that have run their course. The way that the rulers now rule the world will bring about the demise of the world as we know it. Now, Again, one of the things that I'd like to reacquaint ourselves with is not necessarily to view this as bad, but to view it in light of what is coming and recognizing that the old system, the old ways, greed and unfettered greed, no longer serves the greater good. So at some point in time, the laws, the cosmic laws, the law of periodicity, Mother Nature herself gives herself a wee shake and realigns things so they can be acting in more alignment with the cosmic laws. So I suggest that we're seeing a monetary policy that's blowing things up. I think we're seeing a housing system that is blowing things up. And I think we're seeing a whole bunch of bankers right now throwing themselves off buildings, throwing themselves off of embankments. We've got the jobless. Okay, so there's the fear. And now let's chat about the coming of age, the retooling for our coming of age. We retool because we ask ourselves to align with different perspectives. And in the words of one great, brilliant man, there is nothing you can't change but by a change in perspective. And that being said, how is it that we change our perspective? Well, we change our perspective because we have to take responsibility for ourselves. We change our perspective because we welcome the new era and we welcome the departure of the old era. And welcoming these things in brings great things about, and it brings wonderful renewing or renewal to the earth, to the planet, to the economy, to people's mindsets, to people's extrication from the old illusion, the old Maya, the old nonsense that we've been fed for our entire lives. Okay. So now I want to wander through a change of perspective, and I want to wander through a question that I pose to all of my listeners and all of my students when I was teaching and all of my students when I continue to teach. And that it goes like this. If you could sit in front of a very wise sage, a master perhaps, whether it would be Buddha or Lao Tzu or Confucius or Jesus or Saint Germain or Kuthumi or Moria, any of these masters, if you could sit in front of them and you were given the opportunity to ask but one question, the response to that question, the response of which would so fundamentally change the very fabric of your life going forward, what would that question be? Imagine, if you will, sitting in front of somebody who is incredibly wise, incredibly plugged in, if you will, perfectly intuitive, perfectly cognizant of past, present, and future, and perfectly aligned with your brilliant, honorable, loving evolution. What would that question be? So we posit this to students all the time. So I'm going to give you just another moment to ponder that. What would you ask? And oftentimes people say, well, I mean, you know, we would have the Monty Python skit on what's the meaning of life. We would have the greedy skit on what's the winning lottery numbers. We would have the, you know, where do I go to find a hot woman or a handsome man? We have all these questions that oftentimes peter out over a time. Now, we have some very curious, very studious, very brilliant engineering students in many of our classes who take this quite seriously. And I give it to them, and I take days before I respond. And oftentimes, they do. It drives them nuts because they're noodling on this, they're brooding about it, and they are asking, what would the question be? And often, after a day or two or three, they come up with great questions. And ultimately, the question that you could ask of a master is, how can I be of service? That's a big question, the likes of which creates opportunity and creates a flow of the universe that then facilitates you unfolding your place in this world. And we also talk about a statement that is propagated throughout the class, throughout the world, and that is, there are things to be done by you that are done better by you than anybody else on the planet. So get on with it. Get on with it. Now, when these kids get that question, there is a great sense of relief, and there is a great sense of purpose. So now let's elaborate a little on how can I be of service? How can I be of service to, who would you suggest? Well, let's do this. How can I be of service to myself? How can I be of service to my body? How can I be of service to my state of mind? How can I be of service to my diet? How can I be of service to my wife or husband? How can I be of service to my parents? How can I be of service to my children? How can I be of service to my grandchildren? How can I be of service to my neighbor? How can I be of service to society, to the community, to the city, to the province, to the country, to the globe? How can I be of service to the wise sages that walk the earth, helping graciously and lovingly along with the evolution of the planet? Know thyself, one of those great phrases that Plato gave us, or Socrates, or Pythagoras, or Kuthumi. Know thyself. The great questions of the ages, right? Who are we? Where do we come from? Why are we here? And where do we go from here? Okay, I'm going to give you a brain teaser now, and I want to introduce you to a concept of changing perspective and changing your perception of your identity. You aren't who you think you are. You are not even who others think you are. You are who you think others think you are, and you are lost. I'm going to say that again because it is a bit of a brain twister, teaser. You are not who you think you are. You aren't even who others think you are. You are who you think others think you are, and you are lost. Now go find yourself. Who are you? How is it that you can be of service? How is it that you can serve yourself? How is it that you can serve others? Big questions. Big food for thought. Can we see the world with eyes unclouded by longing? Do we actually see things, or do we actually look at them and register something completely different? Our friend and delightful guide, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, gave us Sherlock Holmes. And one of the things that Sherlock Holmes was absolutely brilliant at doing was being able to see things that others would merely look at. So he would chat with Holmes and he'd say, "So Holmes, how many stairs on our home," which was on Baker Street. And Holmes would say, Watson would say, "I have no idea, Sherlock. Why do you ask?" And he said, "Because most people only look and they don't see things. They miss the details. They miss the nuance. They miss the truths behind what they're seeing. And they rely on mass mind, mass media, memes, viral memes, viral thought forms that are propagated into the world by those people who want you to think what they want you to think. And that's a bit frightening. That is a bit frightening. Mass mind, mainstream media, the governments, the military, the very, very large companies that rely on the government and the military and the monetary system to stay alive, they have a vested interest in keeping people in the proverbial dark. They don't want you to be self-reliant. They don't want you to be aligned with and speaking and promoting the truth. They don't want that because it threatens their very livelihood, their very being. It's as if there's a monster under the bed, and you take your child out and you shine a light under the bed and you show the child that there is no monster under the bed. You've taken away the myth. You've turned the lights on. That is an incredibly important aspect of waking up and of retooling. Okay? Waking up and retooling. So I'm going to now share a visual with you, even though this is radio, this is Blog Talk. I'm going to share a video with you because I want to further along our conversation to bring about a perspective on what we think we know. So imagine, if you will, the rotation of Pluto around the sun. That's a pretty big parabola, if you will. That's a pretty big parabolic curve. However, Pluto is some gazillion million miles away from the sun, and it revolves around the sun. Now that's, imagine, if you will, for ease of explanation, that's a great big circle. The sun's in the middle, our solar system, the depths of our solar system, which is, you know, Pluto is out there. And so that is circling the sun. And imagine that as a piece of pie. Now imagine, if you will, a slice of that piece of pie that is at the edge. It is 100,000 miles across. And that slice of pie is but a sliver of this piece of pie. But that, let's say that represents what we think we know, or even what we do know. And now let's take another slice, equally as big. It's 100,000 in its, on its edge. It's 100,000 miles across on its edge. And if that is a slice, that represents what we know we don't know. Let's do this again. A slice, pretty skinny slice in terms of what is known. And then another slice, same size, is what we know we don't know. And the rest of that pie, ladies and gentlemen, is what we don't know we don't know. Think about that. Or in the words of Dan Rowan, put that in your pipe and smoke it. So now, let's wander through the fact that what we don't know, is part of the coming of the new age. And it's part of the retooling for your coming of age. And it's part of you taking responsibility for your own evolution by your own hand, by your own volition, and by your own diligence. Has science historically been wrong in certain things? Absolutely. We have, back in the days of Michelangelo and Leonardo, we have the thought that bodies, the various bodies that women would give birth to, were just merely stuck in that body as a miniature of the woman. And then another miniature would be in that miniature, kind of like Russian dolls. That's how the medical community thought at one point in time. Until actually somebody discovered, somebody thought, somebody went to the laboratory and started to do experiments. So it changed their understanding. Science is in this wonderful place of stepping into the custodians of a new era of thinker. I'm firmly of the belief that we now have the children that were born in the 60s, a few, but in the 70s and 80s and 90s, these children that are born are absolutely flipping brilliant. And they're being drugged into oblivion because they have OCD or they have ADHD or whatever, and they have the big pharma don't want these kids to be expanding their brilliance or manifesting their genius, as we are wont to say. And so we have these new scientists who beg to think outside of the box. And that's paradigm shifting, ladies and gentlemen, paradigm shifting. It is a place where science starts to investigate outside of the box. It starts to look at that part of the slice of the pie that says, I want to ask questions about don't know what you don't know. Because the universe acts in very odd ways, and the scientists of today, the astrophysicists of today, will look at what they see and the effects of what they see and not be able to explain what is happening in those in that regard. And that being said, the system that we have of the old way needs to break down in order for a new system to replace it. Needs to break down for the new system to replace it, and it needs to expand. Now, what we have seen in a brilliant display of exponential growth is the internet. The internet. How big is technology? Where is technology bringing us? How is it facilitating our evolution? It used to be the smartest guys on the planets were the ones with the biggest library who could do the most reading. You now have access, effectively unfettered access, to all the knowledge that mankind has merely by plugging into the internet and saying, where can I find this? Now, some people try to harness and sell it. Some people try to corner the market on it. Yes. Some people try to stifle it, but it's the old adage, and it's a cliche, albeit, but it is not illegitimate, and that is, the truth will set you free. And when we have access to this, when we have access to programs that turn our lights on, that programs that make us question the status quo, when we have programs and access to information, all the literature, all the YouTube videos where these brilliant people are making YouTube videos. Yes, other wankers are making YouTube videos that are horrible and mind-bogglingly redundant or ridiculous or a diversion. But in this realm of duality that we live, these are balanced out by some of the brilliant work that is being put on the internet now via YouTube, via whatever other venues and aspects that has this disclosure going on. Seek and you shall find. Seek, seek, seek. Look for the truth. We have, as self-conscious individuals, we have an obligation to seek and to speak the truth. So how big is technology? YouTube has, from what I've understood recently, has 72 hours of video being uploaded every minute. That's not inconsequential. We have the ability to educate ourselves via the use of the internet. Although the universities are having a bit of a go with this, they're trying to figure out how to accommodate the use of technology in educating people. But one of the things that is definitely food for thought is when you have a hunger and you are directed to the smorgasbord, if you will, of educational tools, of information on the web, you need to express and you need to exercise discernment in finding what best suits you. But in the very same breath, there is no limit to what you can find on the internet, it would appear. Now, the internet, as we have said before, is the precursor to telepathy and the precursor to the use of the mental bodies within man that the masters have been talking about and teaching about forever. And this is that the use of the internet is the precursor to the use of telepathy, being able to plug into certain aspects in the higher realms that bring you information that you need merely by the asking. So, is science experiencing a paradigm shift? Yes, it is. Is science going to get us there? Well, the old science cannot get us there. The new science will look so differently from the old science that it will be looked upon historically by the historians as a great shift, a great mental shift in the very fabric of humanity. This involves extrication, if you will, or renunciation, if you will, of the old ways of thinking. And it also represents an extrication from the governments, the politicians, the military, the civilization that runs itself and fuels itself on greed. And this is part of, you know the truth and it'll set you free. It's also part of turning the lights on brightly enough to know that when you're being bamboozled, okay? When we understand the rule and the way exponential growth happens, we become more conversant with how it can be used beneficially or how it can be abused detrimentally, just depending on the context. Now, that being said, the use and the printing of money with no thought of how the exponential increase in the money supply will have on the government, on the population, is unbelievably, shamefully contrary to the beneficial, to the benefit of everyone. It only benefits a few. Exponential growth, what do we call exponential growth in terms of biology? What is that? It's called cancer. Exponential growth of anything where it merely consumes to consume and it merely grows to grows is called cancer. Frighteningly, we are a society and we are basically a globe where the few have infected the many with the cancer of the few's greed. Greed destroys you. Greed destroys you. Now, let us reintroduce the brilliance of technology, the brilliance of the other side of the fence, and let us reintroduce you to what is happening and what is coming. Back to technology. The internet itself is a great expose on the stepping into somebody's library. Can you imagine the library that we have that is now the internet? It is stunning. We have infinite computing. We now have computer power that is growing exponentially. So exponential growth can be bad in terms of cancer. It can also be good in terms of its capacity to do things. The speed of computer technology now is shocking. You take a little iPhone, for example, and it has more computing power in it than all of the computers that got the man to the moon in this little telephone. Smartphone. It is a computer in and of itself. We have seen the development of technology in the last little while that has been absolutely mind-bogglingly brilliant. And there's a wonderful book written by a guy named Peter Diamandis called Abundance. And he talks about these technologies that are growing exponentially. Here's some of them. Infinite computing, we talked about. Sensors and networks. And you now have sensors that can sense things not once a second, but 300 or 400 times a second, 1,000 times a second, a nanosecond. And you've got networks that are smart networks. You've got robotics. They now, most of the car industry has embraced the robotics industry or the robotics usefulness because robots can be so much more precise than the physiology of mankind. We have 3D printing. I don't know if any of you have seen 3D printing, but there's some wonderfully positive things about 3D printing that are extraordinary in their usefulness. And on the dark side, you can also use a 3D printer to make a gun that shoots bullets. Synthetic biology. We're now seeing biologists think outside of the envelope, outside of the boundaries of conventional science. Digital medicine is happening. There's some brilliant things happening in medicine. There's also some brilliant things happening in nanomaterials, nanotechnology. The nanotechnologists have done some very interesting things, and we also come to that place where science now starts to remind themselves of how important the old cosmic laws are. The law of correspondence is as above, so below. And one of the things that the scientists are now seeing with brilliant clarity is the smaller they get, the more things seem the big things. The macro reflects the micro, and the micro reflects the macro. And artificial intelligence. Well, the artificial intelligence is now in an iPhone, and it's called Siri, S-I-R-I. And it's in the iPhone, and you ask Siri, make me an appointment. You ask Siri, who won the hockey game last night? You ask Siri, what's the weather like? You ask Siri, I'm driving at 100 kilometers an hour. What is that in miles per hour? And Siri spits back, well, let me see. Here's the answer. It's stunning. And how we utilize it and how we embrace it also is a very important aspect of how it will serve us. Let's get that. How it will serve us and how we use it to provide service, to be better educated, to be better informed, to be better acquainted with what is going on. So we as mankind, but certainly we as the listeners to this, have an obligation to be better educated so that you cannot be bamboozled, so that you cannot be used for somebody else's agenda. There was a movie some time ago that Russell Crowe was in and Al Pacino was in, and it was called The Whistleblower or something. I think it had to do with the tobacco industry. I'm not sure if it was called The Whistleblower. If Jeanine was here, she would be able to tell us what the movie was. But it was about the tobacco industry and how all they were doing, the whole objective of the tobacco industry is to commit products into their cigarettes to create addictions so people could not stop smoking. Addictive addiction sticks or whatever. They made some obscene reference in that regard. Now, that being said, are we prepared to allow the powers that be to addict us to their agenda? Are we prepared to allow the powers that be to run amok? Are we prepared? The system is broken. The system is broken. Are we prepared to recognize that, acknowledge that, and become more and more self-reliant so as this breakdown happens bigger and bigger, sooner and sooner, are we prepared to step into the new space of being self-reliant, self-defiant, defy the little self to plug into your genius, and create an environment where you seek and speak the truth? We are oftentimes caught in a hole. And there's an old adage, and it goes, when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. When you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. Science and the evolution of science and technology and the evolution of science and technology is our tool. We are not its. Do not let the scientists use you. Use science for your benefit. Use science for your benefit. The scientists have historically been wrong, and we trust that good science, if you will,
has a capacity to illustrate and illuminate rather than propagate what they want to believe. The scientists don't want to know that good health lies in the patient, not in the science of pharmacology. The scientists want you to think that the medical community will take care of you. The government wants you to think that the government will take care of you. I don't know, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not convinced at all that the government has any interest in taking care of anybody but themselves. I have great, great respect for and acknowledgement for those of you with ears to hear and eyes to see and read, that you will listen to and understand and respectfully acknowledge your brilliance, your genius, and do not shortchange it. This is your life. Be very mindful that you are not kept in the dark any longer. Be very mindful that your incapacity to take action makes you complicit in the wool being pulled over your eyes. Yeah, that's over. Let's replace that with, we would like to stand in a well-lit room and see things as they are, not as we are being told by somebody whose agenda is being forced down our throats. That being said, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for allowing us to be of service, and I look forward to speaking with you next week.